Great. Well, thank you. It's great to be here. I didn't expect Loveland, Colorado to be windier than Lubbock, Texas, but there you go. That's life. So as you can see from the title, there's a lot to talk about today. But I'd also like to point out that although I'm up here talking, there's a lot of people that are behind a lot of the research that I mentioned today. So Dr. Milt Thomas, Dr. Mark Enns in the Department of Animal Science at CSU, also Dr. Frank Gehry, Tim Holtz, and Dr. Greta Krafzer in the Department of Clinical Sciences. And also we have two researchers at Colorado University who are actually interested in the human disease, so pulmonary hypertension and right heart failure in humans. And so they're interested in cattle because the disease has a lot of overlap with the human disease. So we can actually learn a lot about the human disease from cattle and vice versa too. So after those first three excellent talks, my brain hurts. So I thought we'd start off with a scenario. So let's imagine, close your eyes and hold hands if it helps you to imagine the picture here. So say 2 weeks ago you go out and you're working your cattle. You notice that there's a nice, good-looking steer that shows lethargy and is reluctant to move when you approach that animal. As you get closer, you notice that the breathing is very labored. The calf may have droopy ears and a rough hair coat. So unfortunately, you don't have any medicine, so you go back and you find that same calf the next day and you treat it. 2 weeks later on, you find that calf dead. So you don't find that calf in the meantime. Do you do a necropsy? What do you think that calf died of? Raise your hands if you'd suspect that calf died of a pneumonia. Okay, so we'd assume that calf died of pneumonia based on those clinical signs. But what I'm here to tell you today is that calf may have actually died from brisket disease or congestive heart failure, as it's more appropriately known scientifically. So that brings me to the three key messages that I want you to go back home, take home with you. First is that brisket disease or congestive heart failure is not unique to high altitude. So for a long time, brisket disease has been known as high altitude disease because historically it was only found at altitudes over 7,000 feet. But that's actually no longer true. We see more and more cases of brisket disease occurring at lower altitudes. Secondly, congestive heart failure is becoming increasingly problematic. So we know this as, for sure in the feedlot industry, and if the cow-calf industry parallels the feedlot industry, then it's likely that the same trend is occurring in the cow-calf industry too. Thirdly, I'd encourage you to take a closer look. So although the calf may present with signs of chronic pneumonia, it may actually have brisket disease because the clinical signs are very similar. So I'd encourage you to talk with your veterinarian about how to do a necropsy and maybe take a closer look at some of these calves that die showing signs that are consistent with pneumonia, because it may well turn out that you have a brisket disease problem which may have been going on undiagnosed for many years. So over the next half an hour, I'm just going to give a background about heart failure and the various types of heart failure, what makes brisket disease different from other causes of heart failure, what are we doing to manage it, how big of a problem is it, and what are the risk factors for brisket disease. How do pulmonary arterial pressures change with age? So how do pulmonary pressures change from the cow-calf to the feedlot finishing phases? And finally, we'll summarize the key points. So heart failure can be broken down into two types. So there's congenital, which just means present at birth. So the most common congenital heart defect in cattle is a ventricular septal defect. So that's a hole between the two chambers of the heart, the two main chambers of the heart. And then we have the acquired heart diseases too. So we can break these down again into three different types of heart failure. So we have diseases that affect the pericardium, so the outside of the heart. A common one is hardware disease. So when a cow ingests a foreign metal object, usually a sharp piece of wire, which punctures through the diaphragm into the sac surrounding the heart. Next, we have diseases of the myocardium. So that just means the wall of the heart. So common causes of diseases affecting the wall of the heart would be haemophilus, which commonly occurs in feedlot cattle, particularly in Canada. And finally, we have diseases that affect the inside of the heart. So we call that endocarditis. And so these diseases are bacterial infections affecting the valves, the main valves of the heart. So the purpose of any valve in the body, within the blood vessels, is to prevent a backflow of blood. So when we have endocarditis, the infection of the valves, we have blood going back the way it came. Okay, so what makes brisket disease different is that the disease actually is initiated outside of the heart. So it starts in the pulmonary vessels, the blood vessels that take blood from the right side of the heart, the venous blood from the right side of the heart, moves through the pulmonary vessels, through the lungs, becomes oxygenated, and moves into the left side of the heart. So the disease actually starts in the pulmonary vessels, it affects the whole heart. So as you can see in this image here, on the left, we have a heart from a calf that died of brisket disease. So you'll see it's more of a pancake shape than the normal Valentine shape heart of a normal calf. So the right ventricle, so the one that is made, the chamber of the heart that is mostly affected in brisket disease is on your left, and the left ventricle is on your right as you're looking at the screen there. And you'll notice that ventricle is particularly dilated when you compare that to the normal heart. So this is just a diagram just to review some of the anatomy of the heart and lungs. So as you're looking at this image here, the purple indicates the venous blood. So this is the deoxygenated blood that is returning to the heart. So that's returning from the tissues of the body that have utilized that oxygen. And so now it needs to be pumped from the right side of the heart up through the lungs, become oxygenated, move to the left side of the heart, so into the left ventricle, where it's pumped out to the body, where the oxygen is then utilized. So with brisket disease, we actually have disease in the pulmonary artery. So this is the vessel that comes up from the chamber on the left, as you're looking at the diagram, up into the lungs, and we have pathology that occurs in those vessels and affects the right side of the heart. So this is just a schematic diagram that illustrates the current theory of brisket disease in cattle. So it's thought that low levels of oxygen cause the pulmonary arteries to contract. And so that's an acute response. It's a rapid response that all mammals, including you and I, will show when we're exposed to high altitude. So at high altitude, we have low oxygen levels, so the pulmonary arteries contract down. So our pulmonary pressures will actually increase when we go up to high altitude. And when we come back down to low altitude, the pulmonary arteries relax and the pulmonary pressures drop. But if low levels of oxygen remain in place, then those arteries start to thicken. So we get some permanent changes in those pulmonary arteries. And that causes the blood vessels to narrow, which increases the pulmonary arterial pressure. So the best way, the best analogy to use is if I'm sure you've all put your hand over the end of a hose pipe. So when you start putting your hand over the end of a hose pipe that's flowing, you'll feel that buildup of pressure in that hose pipe, and that's because you're adding resistance to the flow of water through that hose pipe. And so the same is true for blood moving through the pulmonary arteries. As those pulmonary arteries contract down, the resistance increases. So it's a little, just like that. You're putting your hand over the end of that hose pipe. And so because the resistance increases, the pressure increases. Because the pressure remains high, then the right side of the heart has to work harder to pump blood. And that's why we get the disease. So what does the disease look like? Well, if we were to take a tissue sample from the lung, indicated by this yellow line here, in a normal animal, so this is a cross-section through one of these pulmonary arteries, so the artery that takes blood from the right side of the heart through to the lungs, this is a normal pulmonary artery. So it's nice and wide and dilated. are surrounding the pulmonary artery. You see these little lines which indicate the alveoli. They're the gas exchange membranes of the lung. That's where you absorb your oxygen and exhale your CO2, your carbon dioxide. And in a calf that died of brisket disease, we see this. So this is the thickening that I'm talking about. So the vessel, because the vessel becomes smaller, narrower, then the resistance to blood flow increases and the pulmonary pressure increases, increasing the workload on the heart. So why does the heart thicken? Why does the right ventricle increase in size and thicken? Well, anyone that does resistance training in the gym appreciates that you have to increase the weight that you're lifting to increase your muscle mass. Yeah, so we call it resistance training. The reason we call it resistance training is because you pick a heavier weight to increase your muscle mass. If you use the lighter weights, you're not going to increase your muscle mass. So the same is occurring in the heart here. So the right side of the heart has to work harder to pump against these higher pulmonary pressures. So in the short term, we get a thickening of that right ventricle. Over the long term, because the right side of the heart can't pump as much blood out of the heart as it receives, then the chamber starts to dilate. And that, with the dilation, we start to see the first clinical signs. But as the heart dilates, it cannot pump. It still cannot pump as much blood forward out of the heart as it receives, and so it just continues to dilate. So with each relaxation of the heart, more and more blood fills the chamber of the heart. It dilates, and eventually the heart begins to fail. So it no longer contracts effectively, and the valves which prevent the backflow of blood no longer are opposed to each other. And so that's when we start to see the jugular pulsations. So if you've seen a calf with pulsations of the jugular vein, that's because the valves in the right side of the heart are no longer functioning. So eventually the heart will fail, it no longer pumps, and the calf will die of heart failure. So this is what it looks like. This is actually a picture from a feedlot animal. So this is a bird's eye view of those chambers. So the right ventricle is on the left of your image here, and the left ventricle is on the right side as you're looking at this picture. And you'll notice that the chambers are very similar in thickness. So normally the right chamber, the right ventricle, is actually approximately a third of the thickness of the left ventricle, because it pumps against such lower blood pressures. So why do we see the clinical signs that we see with right-sided heart failure? So as the blood begins to back up in the venous side, because the right side of the heart can't pump as much blood forward out of the right side through to the left side, then the blood begins to back up in the venous circulation. And so with that congestion, as we call it, with that congestion of blood, we get an increase in pressure in the venous circulation. So that forces water out of those vessels and into the surrounding tissues. So I'll use analogy again of the hose pipe, but this hose pipe has leaks in it. But you don't know that the hose pipe has leaks until you occlude the hose pipe with your hand. And then you'll really start to see that water come out of those holes in that hose pipe. So the same is true for the venous system. As you increase the pressure due to the failing right side of the heart, water moves out of the bloodstream into the surrounding tissues, and you'll start to see it in the more dependent regions of the body. So in the brisket, under the jaw, in the abdomen, and even in the chest and around the heart. So this is actually a steer that came from a cow-calf operation at around 4,000 feet, actually in Colorado. And you'll notice that this animal has a swelling of the brisket. It also has some blood just over the jugular vein. So we just measured its pulmonary arterial pressure. And it's continuing to bleed because the pulmonary arterial pressures are so high that it becomes harder to actually stop the flow of blood. So these are some of the other changes that you'll see if you were to do a necropsy on a calf that died of pulmonary hypertension and right-sided heart failure. So that water that I mentioned that pools in the tissues can be seen in the brisket region. So this top left image shows the water in the connective tissue under the skin of the brisket. The image on the bottom right Shows the cross section through the liver. So a change that occurs in the liver is this nutmeg appearance or mottling of the liver, and we get that because the pressure, this back pressure or congestion from the right side of the heart causes the causes such high pressures in the liver that the cells begin to die off, and so we get this mottling appearance of the liver. We also see fluid in the sac around the heart, around the in the pericardium. And so this is an image of a calf showing the swollen belly, which we'll also see with some cases of brisket disease. But notice that this calf, too, doesn't actually have swelling of the brisket region. So although we use the term brisket disease because typically animals will show swelling of the brisket, not all animals present the same way. So this animal shows swelling of the belly but doesn't show swelling in the brisket. So what can we do about what can we do to mitigate against the effects of brisket disease? Well, fortunately, pulmonary arterial pressure is moderately to highly heritable. So we can actually screen our breeding stock and identify which animals are most susceptible to the effects of low levels of oxygen. And so by performing a pulmonary arterial pressure test, we can identify those individuals and remove them from the breeding herd or not purchase them. So the pulmonary arterial pressure test involves putting a needle, a large gauge needle, into the jugular vein. Then we feed this a catheter down through the jugular vein, and that passes through the right atrium, through the right ventricle, and then up into the pulmonary artery. And it's there that we take the pulmonary arterial pressure measurement. And so when we talk about PAP scores or PAP measures, we actually are referring to the mean pulmonary arterial pressure. So that's the pressure in that pulmonary arterial vessel that moves up from the right ventricle up into the lungs. So up until recently, we didn't have anything other than anecdotal evidence to say that PAP testing is really successful. But a couple of years ago, we PAP tested 3-month-old calves on a ranch at 9,000 feet, and we PAP tested 58 calves. Of those, 7 died between 3 months of age and 7 months of age. 51 survived. Of those 51, their mean pulmonary arterial pressure was approximately 40 millimeters of mercury. Of those that died, their mean pulmonary arterial pressure was approximately 10 millimeters of mercury higher. So this indicates that pulmonary arterial pressure testing really is a successful tool in reducing the incidence of brisket disease in your calf crop. In fact, we tested 58 calves, but you'll notice that the only 57 are shown here. One of the calves had such a high pulmonary arterial pressure that we couldn't advance the catheter into that right side of the heart. And these calves are all subclinical, so they were all healthy at the time of testing. So if PAP truly is a moderately to highly heritable trait, then selecting on PAP should reduce the incidence of brisket disease in your calf crop. So back to the first point. So we recently published a study showing that congestive heart failure is truly becoming increasingly problematic in the cattle industry. So this study was actually done on feedlot cattle. It involved 1.6 million cattle. The data was provided by the Feedlot Health Management Group in Okotoks, Alberta. And so in this study, 10 Canadian feedlots were involved, and they ranged in altitudes from 2 to 4,000 feet. 5 U.S. feedlots were involved. Again, their altitudes range from 2 to 4,000 feet, so not particularly high altitudes. We looked at various risk factors for brisket disease in these feedlots, as listed here in the table. But I'd just like to focus on the incidence of congestive heart failure over the years. So for this, we could only use the Canadian data set. So we looked at the incidence of congestive heart failure from the years 2000 to the years 2012, increasing by 4-year increments. And so if you look here at the year 2000, we see that approximately 3 per 10,000 cattle died of congestive heart failure or brisket disease. Approximately five times more cattle died of digestive disorders. But then over just an 8-year period, we see that the incidence of congestive heart failure actually doubled. And so the increase was actually significantly more than the increase in digestive disorders over that same period. So this indicates that congestive heart failure or brisket disease is becoming more problematic in the feedlot industry. Unfortunately, we don't have any data to say that the same occurring is also occurring in the cow-calf industry. But if the cow-calf industry parallels the feedlot industry in any way, then it's safe to say that the same is likely occurring in the cow-calf industry too. So we also did a study to determine which calves are susceptible to brisket disease. Is it the same calves that are susceptible to brisket disease at high altitude that also get brisket disease in the feedlot? So to investigate this, we performed pulmonary arterial pressure measurements on calves at the CSU herd in Saratoga, Wyoming. And so we tested calves at 4 and 6 months of age, and then again when they're in the feeding period at 4,000 feet. And so I'm only just going to present just one graph of the results here. And this is just a subsample of the cattle that were studied. But you can see here, so this graph shows the mean pulmonary arterial pressure going along the y-axis, and then we have the age in days along the x-axis. So the first two markers indicate the pulmonary arterial pressures at 4 and 6 months of age at 7,000 feet, and the last two markers indicate those same calves at during the feeding phases at approximately 13 and 18 months of age. So each line represents an individual calf. So what this graph shows is that it looks like those calves that are susceptible to brisket disease at high altitude are also perhaps the same calves that are susceptible to brisket disease in the feeding period. And you also see that the calves are the lines don't overlap very much, which suggests that there is indeed a genetic predisposition to this disease. So if we can screen calves with a genetic tool, perhaps as early as the cow-calf phases, then we can identify those individuals which are susceptible to brisket disease and manage them differently. Okay, so the next point, brisket disease is not unique to high altitude. So after this talk, anyone that uses the term high altitude disease, Your neighbor has my permission to pull their tongue out. It's really not a disease of high altitude. Historically, that was true, but it's no longer the case. So please don't use the term high altitude disease. It really upsets me. So I spend too long researching this. That's why. So this graph just shows why. So again, this is feedlot level data, but I think it shows the point quite nicely. So each bar here is one individual feedlot. So the blue bars represent U.S. feedlots. The pink bars represent Canadian feedlots. And we have altitude along the x-axis here. And we have the frequency of brisket disease along the y-axis. So you'll see here that it appears that the incidence of brisket disease really does increase with altitude, as you'd expect. If low levels of oxygen are the root cause of the disease, then the higher the altitude that a cattle resides at, the greater the baseline risk for brisket disease. So feedlots at around 4,000 feet, approximately 15 to 17 cattle per 10,000 cattle entering the feed yard died of brisket disease. But what's perhaps even more striking is that even at 2,000 feet, we see right-sided heart failure. So again, brisket disease or congestive heart failure is not high altitude disease, so please don't use that term any longer. And this just confirms some of the anecdotal reports of feedlot brisket disease cropping up in feedlots in Nebraska and other feedlots on the high plains. Furthermore, brisket disease is not specific to beef cattle, so it's also problematic in Holstein heifers too, in the dairy industry. So this was a study that was published several years ago, and so this was a study of two dairies and a heifer raising facility, I believe, that were located at 5,000 feet. So they report that actually brisket disease was the second leading cause of death loss after pneumonia in calves less than 1.5 years of age. But look here. So on the I don't know if you can see it very well from where you are, but they describe the clinical signs, so dyspnea, so labored breathing, tachycardia, increased heart rate, distension and pulsation of the jugular veins, lethargy, and weight loss were the clinical signs. So only one of those clinical signs is actually specific to brisket disease, and that's the distension and pulsation of the jugular veins. All of the rest could indicate pneumonia. And in fact, in this particular paper, they say that for a long time, a lot of cases were misdiagnosed as chronic pneumonia because they didn't look. They didn't do the necropsies to see whether it truly was a pneumonia. And so again, I'd encourage you to take a closer look. If you get the opportunity, if you come across a dead calf, then call your veterinarian out and have them run through a necropsy with you so that you can do it in the future. And even if you're not sure of the signs, take pictures. Ask your veterinarian which samples should I take, or contact me. Send me the pictures. And so this leads me to a study that we actually did several years ago too. So and this is how I actually became involved with this research. So some ranchers from the western slopes of Colorado came to us and told us that they were losing a lot of calves between branding in the spring and weaning in the fall. And they thought that these calves were dying from summer pneumonia because of the clinical signs looked like a pneumonia. And so they were expecting to see that this was a particular virus or maybe a particular bacteria that was causing the death loss of these calves. Some of the ranches were reporting between 10 and 20% of their calves died between branding and weaning in the fall. But when we went out and did the investigations, when we actually opened up the calves and looked to see what we could find, we actually found that half of the calves were actually dying of pneumonia, as the ranchers thought, but half of them were actually dying of brisket disease. And these are from ranches that have actually been using PAP testing as a screening tool, but perhaps need to adjust their criteria for their selection of breeding stock. So again, I'd encourage you to take a closer look. You may suspect pneumonia, but it may actually be brisket disease. Okay, so finally, I'd just like to close with just one case study. So I recently moved down to Lubbock, Texas, and so I'm now at Texas Tech University. So I decided to go out and look and see if there's any evidence of brisket disease at that altitude, so approximately 3,200 feet. And so the very first case that I did was a Mexican steer that arrived at a feed yard, had been on feed for 2 weeks, and showed signs of pneumonia. So I opened up the calf, and sure enough, it had pneumonia. About 50% of the lung was affected. And so a lot of people would stop there. But I like to look at the heart, and so I did look at the heart. And so this slide here just shows the consolidation of the lung and some pus confirming that it had pneumonia. But then I dug out the heart and looked at the heart. So this slide should now look familiar to you. So this heart doesn't have that Valentine heart shape that you'd expect of a normal heart. It looks more pancake-shaped. It's more dilated. That right ventricle on the left side of the screen there is dilated and flabby. So this animal actually died of right-sided heart failure. This animal died of brisket disease at 3,000 feet. But this would have gone down in the record books as pneumonia. So we really need to take a closer look and determine, is it truly a pneumonia, or did it die of brisket disease? If it died of brisket disease, then maybe we need to reevaluate our breeding program and consider PAP testing or screen the existing breeding stock and identify those bulls that have a high pulmonary arterial pressure, typically over 45, especially over 49 millimeters of mercury, and take those out of the herd. So just to summarize, brisket disease is not unique to high altitude, so please don't use high altitude disease or high mountain disease, especially around me. Congestive heart failure is becoming increasingly problematic. This is true for the feedlot industry. Unfortunately, we don't have it's much harder, as you'd understand, to evaluate this in the cow-calf industry, but it's likely that the same is occurring in the cow-calf industry, especially if this is a genetic problem. And thirdly, I'd encourage you to take a closer look. So it may look like pneumonia, but it may be brisket disease. In fact, just to complicate things, it may well be both. So pneumonia can lead to brisket disease. And so that's the link between respiratory disease and brisket disease. In this study of the feedlot cattle, treatment for respiratory disease actually was associated with a 2- to 3-fold increase in the risk of death from brisket disease. So in addition to altitude, a respiratory disease could also cause low levels of oxygen. So cattle at high altitude have a higher baseline risk of brisket disease. And if they get a pneumonia, a shipping fever, then that will increase, that will decrease the oxygen levels even further and may be sufficient to cause pulmonary hypertension and right-sided heart failure or brisket disease. So with that, I'd like to thank you. And if you do have any questions, then I'll be at the bullpen session later on. But I've also put down my contact information here. So if you do have any questions or if you're doing a necropsy and want a second opinion, then please call me. Hopefully I'll be free. I love to look at pictures of heart failure. To preempt your first question at the bullpen session, I've answered it for you. Thank you very much.